This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin. Well, it's an annual tradition here at the Toastmasters podcast that we have the pleasure of interviewing the newest world champion of public speaking. And this year is no exception. We have with us today Luisa Montalvo. She's a retiree and dedicated dog rescue volunteer. She's been a Toastmaster for 13 years, currently a member of Hub City Toastmasters. And this past August, at the Toastmasters International 100th Anniversary Convention in Anaheim, California, Luisa was crowned the 2024 World Championship of Public Speaking. Her inspirational speech was entitled 37 Strangers. Luisa rose above seven other final contestants after the eliminating rounds that began earlier this year with about 30,000 participants from 150 countries. Coming to us today from San Juan, Texas, at the almost southern tip of the border, Luisa Montalvo, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, first of all, congratulations on the crown. In 2019, you were the first runner-up. You came so close. How does it feel after not only surpassing 30,000 people, but 60,000 people? And was there ever any doubt for you?
How does it feel? It is still surreal. I am still trying to accept the fact this is not a dream. Oh, was there ever any doubt? Every second of every day. Yes, always the doubt. It's always there. No matter how much you prepare, no matter how good you feel about it, there's always that doubt. And funny you ask that, because the night before I'm supposed to get on the plane to go to Anaheim to compete, it was Monday evening, I'm realizing the two people that I wanted to impress are now deceased. And I questioned, why was I going? I had wanted to impress my mother and my partner, and they were both gone. I was in my car crying, thinking, you know what? Just don't go. I'll try this again next year. No big deal. And then I got a text message from Jeff Stein, who's in Chicago. This is a Toastmaster I have never met, but we have become close over Zoom and email and phone calls. And he's been there all the time encouraging me, asking if I ever need anything. And right when I was crying, he sent me a text and it said, "You never know who's watching you. You never know who you're influencing. Don't give up." I'm like, what? So I get on the phone and I call him. He says, "Hey, Luisa, are you getting ready? I just sent you a text." And I said, "Jeff, I hate you." He said, "What? What did I do?" I said, "Jeff, I had already convinced myself not to go to contests, not to go to the conference. And then you say, don't quit, don't give up. So now I've got to get on the plane." And he started laughing and he says, "Hey, I just think you've got possibilities. I know this is your dream. Don't stop now." And I didn't. And here I am, number one in the world. So that's a Toastmaster. You can't find that anywhere else. I'm so indebted to Jeff for encouraging me when I really needed it.
Wow, that's an answer I did not expect.
Neither did I. Just to share something with you, the morning of the contest, I asked the contest chair if I could change the title of my speech because I wanted to go with a different speech. And she said, "I'm sorry, we already have all your posters up. We already have the title up everywhere." So I had to stick with the speech that I gave. But yes, doubt always.
Because you come across so confident.
Yes, fake it till you make it, I believe is the expression or the wording that I go by.
So Luisa, I understand that there are also a few firsts associated with this win.
Yes. I believe I am the first Hispanic to take the title. I believe I'm also the first female, after placing in the top three or in the finals, to come back and win first place. And I'm researching on whether I am the oldest Toastmaster to win first place.
We were actually talking about this before we started recording, and I did some research myself. Of course, it's limited in terms of what you can find on the internet, and the closest I came was in 2011. Jock Elliott, I believe he was 61 years old, and I remember that speech because I was there in 2011. I believe it was in Las Vegas. So Yeah, this looks like it could be a number of firsts for you. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Your speech, 37 Strangers, and I'm glad you stuck with this one, is part of your recent personal journey. Can you tell us a little bit about the speech and how did you manage to come up with that number of 37, not 38?
Great question. How did I come up with the number? I'm not sure why. I know my favorite number or my lucky number for some reason is 2. I was born May 2nd. For some reason, 2 is a magic number for me. However, I was probably about 15 years old and we were playing with a Ouija board. I was spending the night over at my friend's house. And I, of course, the one question we always ask a Ouija board is, when will I die? The Ouija board came back with 37. I guess I thought I was supposed to die at the age of 37, and I've been obsessed with the number 37 ever since. So I just threw 37 out there. It's a unique number. It's a different number. It's not 12. It's not an even number. So I liked it. That's where I came up with 37.
That's great.
So the speech was about the automobile accident I had been in about 2.5 years ago. And it was a different time in my life, difficult time in my life. So I thought if I shared that with the audience, they would be able to relate for any time they had had some difficulty in their life. And along with the speech, I tried to talk about the unity that I feel we need to come together just as a society and go back to where it didn't matter what labels we had put on different people. I was just trying to make the message of unity and also to let those of my friends that knew that I had been in an accident, that I was doing better. And that was my main concern.
The topic itself was very serious. You open the speech with sharing that your heart had stopped for 6 minutes. Mm-hmm. But then you turned around and you made fun and you said, best sleep ever. I'm curious as to whether you had that right away or whether that was something you added in later.
Oh, no, that was when I started writing the speech. One thing they say, if you're going to write a good speech, your opening is everything. The first 30 seconds of your speech, people are either going to start listening to you or not listen to you. So I thought, well, what better way to start it than, plus I wanted to get the word clear in there. And when I remembered that that's the word you use when they're going to jump start your heart with the defibrillator, I thought I also want it to be the last word I say, but with a different meaning. So I thought, well, how can I do this? And that's when I came up with the idea of, I actually wanted somebody standing over me with the pads, but I thought, well, I can't do that. It's just me. So I turned away and someone said it was a great ventriloquist act. And my hair covered my face. So you shouldn't have been able to tell it was me, that I was just unresponsive. So when I did that, as someone said, one of the critics said, it's pressure built up in the very beginning. And of course, everybody wants to know that you're okay, but then people are worried about you. So I had to let the audience know, look, this isn't going to be about blood or guts or broken bones. This is going to be about my journey, but this is going to be fun. Once I say my heart stopped, you could have heard a pin drop. I had to come back and let the audience know, look, this is going to be fun. So that's why I said, best sleep ever. I've given the audience permission to laugh. And now they're comfortable with the rest of the speech.
That's incredible. Because when you started, I actually was holding my breath when you said best sleep ever. I went,
yes, yes, yes. I think that's one of my best lines other than the God line, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's funny because that's sort of my next question.
Okay, good.
I love that when you started off, I don't want to offend some of you. I want to offend all of you. It's related to what you had just said. And I was going to word it as, well, given that certain topics are sensitive, did you feel that you were sort of taking a risk, taking the chance that you might be offending the judges?
That is an excellent question, Greg. I don't offend somebody in my speeches. I'm not doing it right. According to me, I want to push the boundaries. I want to show people in my 2019, it was about racism. So I wanted to push the boundaries on that too. Whatever topic I'm going to talk about, I'm going to push boundaries and I'm going to take a risk because that's what I love doing. I cannot be the regular, bland speech that we've heard over and over again. That's not me at all. And so I kind of take pride in being able to find something that's going to make a few people uncomfortable. And if the judges were going to be uncomfortable with that, I'll be back next year. No big deal. I'll just keep coming back till I either deserve to win or they're tired of me and just give me the trophy so I'll go away. Either way, I'll take it. Either way.
I love how you created the context by using the word my.
Mm-hmm. Well, I stopped and thought, well, I was talking to God. I was actually practicing the speech in front of my best friend's older son. He was in the background. He says, hey, I don't believe in God. Oh, that's right. I can't say God. Wait, I can say my God because he's mine. What my God and I share is what my God and I share. What your God and you share, that's between you and your God. My God says, hey, this is okay. This is what how you should act. So I thought, if I say my God, right away people are going to say, oh, okay, she's not talking about my God. She's talking about her God. But then if I say, I want to offend all of you, tongue-in-cheek humor, okay, well, it's not so bad. If she's talking about her God, big deal. Okay, as long as she's not talking about my God, which she isn't, she already said she's talking about hers, and she wants to offend all of us. Okay, fine. Go ahead, Louisa. What have you got to say? It's a passport to be able to say what I want to say, and I've already excused myself of any criticism, so I would think. Sometimes that just isn't clear enough, but most people, 99% of the audience, gets it, which is good.
I thought it was elegantly handled. In fact, that question came into my mind when you said it.
Mm-hmm.
Not while I was preparing for this interview, but when you said it, that was the first thing that came to mind as I'm going, OMG.
Good. And like I said, it's okay if I don't win because I'll keep coming back until you're okay. Luis is on stage. What's she going to say now? And so you start to get used to the, okay, this is going to push the boundaries. This is going to make someone feel uncomfortable. Nonetheless, the truth. There you go. I'm glad that you remembered that because that was my intent, was for you to remember the speech and what I said. So I did my job correct. Great, Craig. Great.
Thanks, Louisa. Now, Louisa, you had a large stage, but you also had limited mobility. You came out in a wheelchair. Now, did you feel that it was a help or hindrance? And did you make any adjustments for it?
Wow, great question. Help or hindrance. I do remember when they had allowed us to have the mic check. I went to the edge of the stage to see how far I could go out on the stage because the lectern was not going to be moved. And the lectern, had I been speaking, I know that it would have been in my way and it would have hindered part of the audience on my left side from seeing me. So I thought it was rather excellent that I can't really walk for more than 5 or 10 steps unassisted. I made up my mind, just sit in the wheelchair. You can use it in the intro, which was good. You can hide your props in it for the end of the speech, which was also good. To me, it helps me because if I didn't have to worry about go stage left, go stage right, center, stage left, stage right, center. So if I don't have to worry about moving, then I can concentrate more on the speech instead of worrying about where I should be addressing the audience at different times of the speech. I actually love the fact that I couldn't move. Now, somebody said, hey, you were in a wheelchair. You could have moved all over the stage. But with my luck, I would have rolled right off the stage. And even though I go for the laugh, it wouldn't have been the laugh I would have wanted. I think it was a help for me.
I thought it was very powerful that you stood up. And was that planned?
It was planned because the very beginning I said, so I'm standing at the pearly gates. And I thought, oh, Louisa, stand up. So many people don't believe me, but half of what you see with the final product is stuff that comes to me in the moment. I can't practice this stuff. It just comes to me. The eye roll of the gentleman when he gets married, I had never practiced that. I feed off of the energy of the audience, and that is usually how I get my best material. So no, that was not planned. I stood up thinking, okay, Louisa, stand up because you're standing at the pearly gates. On my critique, my evaluator said, wow, did you notice how she stood up when she was in heaven, but then she sat down when she came back to earth? I sat down because my knees and ankles started hurting. And I said, Louisa, you can't do this whole speech standing up like you did at semifinals. You need to sit down. I had just had a little minor incident right before the speech where my leg had actually kind of doubled under my wheelchair. So I was in pain on stage. So I said, no, Luisa, sit down. So I sat down, and coincidentally, ironically, perfectly, I sat down after I came back down from heaven. It was a smooth move, but totally uncalculated, but it worked.
Sometimes the best things happen by accident, or you can just say, hey, I'm a professional. I can do things on the fly.
I don't know that I do that. I don't know that I say that, but I'm just thinking sometimes things happen just by accident. Yes.
I think when you stood up, it also gave a message to the audience that you're doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
And how are you doing right now?
It's been 2.5 years. I thought I would have this all wrapped up and be running a marathon, which I've never done. But I thought I'd be running a marathon by now. I thought 3 months and I'm good. And it's been a struggle. And I think the worst thing about it was because I was so sedimentary in my wheelchair, I put on about 25 pounds, which does not help your joints and your bones when you're trying to walk and start all over again walking. I started going to the gym, started working out, started watching what I ate. I lost the 25 pounds plus 5, so I was really happy with that. And now it seems like it's getting a little easier, but it's still painful. And I think that's the hardest thing about it is I can't understand how something that happened so long ago still hurts so bad. But then, you know, when you broke up in seventh grade, break up with your boyfriend or girlfriend, you still feel that. No, but I'm getting better. I made a promise foolishly on stage when I accepted the award that I would be walking next year. And that's kind of a good thing because now it's a goal I've set, as something I've said, and now I feel I have to do it with more vigor. I am now pursuing being able to walk by next year.
That's wonderful. That'll be another first you can add to your list.
There you go. Absolutely.
Luisa, you mentioned that you use the wheelchair to hide your props, and I want to talk about props for a second. Often props are used to create this huge buzz. I remember in 2016 when Darren Tay wore his underwear over his pants and used that as a metaphor for his message. I also noticed, I went back and listened and watched some of your previous speeches. I noticed in 2019, the first impression speech, you had a cowboy hat, a crowbar, and a hammer. The semis, you had a drumstick. And then, of course, in your 37 strangers, you had the defibrillator paddles. What is your philosophy on using props? Because not a lot of the speakers use props.
With props, if it's going to enhance the speech, that's great. However, you don't want the props to overpower the speech. Somebody told me that in my semifinal speech, when I'm talking about not being able to play the drums, somebody said, oh, you need to carry a drum set with you on stage. I said, I can't even walk. How am I going to carry an entire? And see, that would take away entirely from the speech. You don't need the whole drum set. But I love the way I was able to incorporate tapping of the drumstick to make it sound like it's the ticking of a clock, you know, the root of the whole speech for the semifinals. If you're going to use props, make them small. Don't let them overpower the speech. And sometimes you don't need props. I believe the 2019 semifinals, I didn't use a single prop. I just went out there and spoke. Little by little, I started using props and I really liked it. And I thought it was effective. Believe it or not, when I went out there and I had the props for 2019, people saw that I had something. So they're already interested in what I've got. You're already enticing your audience like, oh, what does she have? What is she going to use? When is she going to use it? So to me, it just puts a little more interest in the speech if you have a prop.
And I loved with the speech where you used the drumsticks, where at the end you drop the drumsticks like a mic drop.
Yes, that is the first time I'd ever done that. I don't like people to see my polished speech until I'm ready for them to see it. I did not do that at division, at district, but I thought if I make it to semifinals, I will drop the drumsticks. And that's exactly what I did. Oh my gosh, it was so cool. I felt all Miley Cyrus throwing the microphone on the stage. I said, well, there we go. I'm going to do the same thing with the drumsticks. Yeah. That was more empowering for me, I believe, than for the audience.
You also need to plan your props because when I saw you came on stage with a crowbar and a hammer, I think that was in 2019.
Yes.
I was thinking to myself, how did you get those on the plane?
Interesting question or observation of you, but I didn't have those props because I wasn't going to give that speech. For some reason, at the last hour, the last minute, in the 11th hour, I doubt what I'm going to do or say, and I want to turn and run somewhere else. So in 2019, I already had a speech planned, but that to me was going to be too depressing, And I didn't want to do that to the audience because everybody after my semifinal came up and said, wow, you're going to win. This is good. This is great. I really loved it. And they were just giving me all this energy. And I didn't want to go out there and make everybody cry. So I thought, what are you going to do? So the night before the contest, I took my 2015 humorous speech and I said, I'm going to use this and I'll just change the intro and the ending. But then I needed the hammer, the crowbar, and I happened to have the rosary with me because I was going to use it in my original speech. So I took an Uber down to Dollar Tree. I got the crowbar in the automotive section for a dollar, and I got the mallet. It's, you know, it's a mallet. It's not even a hammer. And that was for a dollar. So I raced back to the hotel with my props. I said, okay, I can make this work. I can make it work. That's where the props came in. I did not even bring them on the plane. I probably never would have made it to Denver.
$2 became priceless. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Now I can hear your puppies in the background. And I also noticed that you managed to work your passion for dogs into your speeches as well. Tell us a little bit about this passion.
It's something I didn't realize I would ever be doing. I went through my life, 8-to-5 job for 35 years, retired. And then on Facebook, somebody had posted an ad or a post saying, can anyone take care of a mom and 6 puppies for a month while we get them quarantined and transported? I said, oh, wow, I can do that because I love animals. So I brought the mom and 6 puppies to my home, took care of them for a month. I was able to learn how to vaccinate them, learn how to take care of them. With that, the lady that was going to be accepting the dog in New York and her puppies said, have you done this before? I said, I have not. She said, would you like to? And I said, absolutely. She says, well, how much would you like to help? And I said, I'll volunteer 8 hours a day because I needed something, I guess, in my life because I had been stagnant here after retiring and wasn't sure what I was going to do. Well, before I knew it, I had 89 dogs in my backyard from a hoarding situation. So I had them in my backyard for about a year until we were able to get them all quarantined, vetted, and transported. I found, wow, it's so fulfilling. It's also will take a toll on your emotional and mental state. So sometimes I just had to pull back a little bit because it can become so overwhelming. But I realized now that I was going to the shelter pulling dogs every other Monday, and it's not the answer. They say rescue is trying to empty an ocean with a teaspoon. You're never going to finish. You're never going to end. I consider myself a problem solver. I thought, okay, so what would solve this problem? And I believe if we were to offer free spay and neuter clinics here in South Texas, that would eradicate our problem within 7 years. And so now that is my passion and my goal, and that's something I've been wanting to work on. Every time I think I'm closer to getting there and to getting there, something will come up that deters me from finishing this project. But I need to get more serious about it. I'm glad I was able to mention it in the speech, hoping that it would help propel me onto the level of being able to finish this project or at least get it started. Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful that you're definitely a spokesperson for our four-legged furry friends who can't really speak for themselves.
Yes.
Now, in your earlier years, I understand from an interview that you spoke for Avon, so, and you speak quite elegantly. How did you come about finding Toastmasters? What convinced you to join?
I would go with my mother to her Avon meetings and started speaking in front of the 200 Avon ladies at the age of 12. So I really never had a fear of public speaking, thanks to my mother instilling in me that there's nothing to be afraid of. I had gone to work. I had just started at Abbott Laboratories in Austin, walking down the hallway, headed to HR to fill out paperwork to become a permanent employee. And I heard laughter coming from a room. And I said, wait, I'm at work. Nobody should be laughing. So I remember peeking in through the window of the door where this laughter was coming from. And there was a gentleman in the front of the meeting room. And his name is Billy Webb. And I'm listening. I've got my ear to the door and I can hear him talking. And of course, my first thought is, I'm funnier than he is. What's going on? So the sergeant at arms wouldn't let me in until he finished his speech. And then he opened the door for me. I said, hey, what's going on? He said, oh, this is Toastmasters, and we're having a humorous contest. The competitor in me said, contest? Humor? Where do I sign up? I signed up during the contest and started there at Abbott Laboratories Toastmasters, and I was there for 3 years, and I actually competed every year that I was there. And then when the group disbanded there at work, unfortunately, I didn't think of going and looking for another club. But when I moved back down home, there was a huge flyer there in the library. I didn't have internet yet. So I saw the poster. It says, join Toastmasters. And I said, yes, I'm going to do this again, because it was so much fun. And that's why I'm here today.
And I'm sure everyone is glad that you made that decision.
I know I am.
Before we do a little wrap, the speech that you thought you were going to give at the finals, what was the title? What was it about?
The 2019 speech that I was going to give was going to be about my grandmother, all the hardships she went through because she came from Mexico, migrated here, and was given a small piece of land, and she worked the fields because that was the barter system where she said she would work the fields if she was allotted a small piece of land. And she worked so hard every day, and she didn't have an education. So when my mother wanted to go to school, she said, you're not going to be like your brother and repeat the first grade three times. The first year you fail in school, you're back out here picking cotton with the rest of us. So my mother made sure she didn't fail a single year in school, went on to become a very successful businesswoman, and she instilled that in me. So because of my grandmother's efforts, the reason we're here is because somewhere, someone down the line had to make a sacrifice, and that was my grandmother. And I thought that speech was too heavy for the audience. So I switched it over to humor because everybody loves humor. I don't know anybody that doesn't like humor. The speech I was going to change to 2 weeks ago before I did 37 Strangers was going to be about a rescue dog. And it took me 7 months for her to gain my trust, for me to catch her. And it was a hilarious incident on how I wound up catching her. I was in the middle of a field in a t-shirt and underwear because I'd fallen in a mud puddle and I'd stripped down to just that. And the police show up and they're, what are you doing out here? It's 2 a.m. Just a crazy, funny speech. But the message was going to be, if there's something you really want, anything in your life, you're going to have to be persistent about going and getting it. Because it took me 7 months of me going every night and feeding this dog for her to finally trust me. So that was going to be the speech I was going to give before the 37 strangers that I actually gave.
Wow. Well, Louisa, this has been so enlightening. And folks, if you have found this as enlightening as I have, I encourage you to share this episode with your friends and family. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Louisa, if you can perhaps let us know where people can connect with you, perhaps they want to find out a little bit more about your dog rescue, what's the best place for them to do that?
Absolutely. Thank you, Greg, for allowing me this. My email is montalvo.luisa@yahoo.com. I'm also on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. I think that's about it.
Okay. And is there a name for your dog rescue?
Foxtrot and Finn Foundation. Again, I am so, so very grateful to the Toastmaster family for the way they've welcomed me and treated me. It's such a wonderful organization. That's the reason why people will say, why do you stay? I said, why wouldn't I? You can't find this anywhere. I don't know of any other organization that actually cares about the well-being of the member, not the organization. It's been so much fun talking with you, Greg. Thank you for this opportunity.
It's been an absolute pleasure, and I wish you all the best.
Ever imagined a book written just for you? Introducing Pooks.ai. We're not just another bookstore. We're the future of reading. Our state-of-the-art AI adapts each book to your specific needs, creating a personalized masterpiece. Visit Pooks.ai now, that's P-O-O-K-S.ai, and use the promotion code SPOTIFY for a whopping 50% off. Pooks.ai, your personalized book awaits.